There was the people that were wounded, the landing craft that dropped the tanks off, were taking wounded back on stretchers. And on the wounded, carrying the wounded on was prisoners of war. And they also went back to England as well. On the landing craft that had come in, and the wounded and prisoners of war went back. Even the slightly wounded went back, because there was no hospital facilities there. So there was quite a lot of prisoners taken. The infantry took the prisoners, quite a lot of prisoners. I think they were glad to get out of it.
Were you close enough to see what state they were in, these chaps?
Oh, they weren't. I mean, they don't have been fighting. Some of them only 3 or 4 hours, so they weren't bad. Not as they were later on. They were all right, and they were young people. As I say, a lot of them were. A lot of them later were the Hitler Youth. I don't think these were Hitler Youth. They would be people that were stationed in the town as garrison troops. They weren't young as we were, but they weren't old men. And they were giving themselves up, coming out of the thing and getting onto the landing craft, and off they went.
So this...
It was a curious to see them. We looked... We didn't reckon that there were anything to be frightened of.
So this first day would just dawn, or the day after the first day would dawn, and warfare would be no longer an adventure, was it?
We were a bit anxious to know what was going to happen. So we had to capture villages. We had villages to capture. And the villages were called not by name, so I couldn't tell you which villages that we captured. I know that one was Breville, but that came later. But the villages were codenamed after cars. Morris, Austin, British cars.
There was two severe battles for Hillman and Morris, strong points in particular. Were you involved in that?
Yes. Hillman, yes.
Hillman was one that didn't fall so easily.
Yes, it was. We had a couple of goes at that. We'd had to pull out at that one and go back in again, in bigger strength.
Now that would be that following day.
Yes.
That action took part.
Well, I can't remember the days that these battles happened. It was all over. It's all muddled up.
Can you remember the fight for Hillman? Because it was highly criticised. I think the infantry were very severely criticised for not taking it quickly.
Who were the infantry?
Suffolks.
That's right.
Do you recall your part in it?
I'm trying to think of the village itself.
I think Hillman was a strong point on the slope going out from Hermansville, not the slope beyond.
Yes.
On the top of the hill, or on the slope of that hill.
Well, I don't know what they expected the infantry to do. You know, they go in and it's so easy to criticise infantry, but
particularly you remember yourself that I'm really concerned with
yes,
whatever recall you've got.
I'm very proud of the infantry. Always have been, and as I said, I couldn't have done what them lads did. Faced death like they did. We did have a bit of cover, but I think. As far as I know, we got pretty well into him with the first attempt. And I don't know why we had to pull out.
Were you able to operate on the fields outside of the villages, leaving the coast? Were you able to operate on that open area that's beyond? There's a slope.
Yes. That slope, I remember that slope pretty well, because when you get up there, I was on the top of that slope at one particular, lagered up on there. This was probably 3 or 4 weeks after D-Day, and that's how far we'd got, and we'd come back there on a lager, and I was suddenly called upon to go to the colonel's dugout by a dispatch rider. Came along the top And I went along to see the colonel, and a Messerschmitt or the like came up over the from the other side from towards Caen, and I pulled my revolver out and I fired a full clip at him, six rounds, and I could see this young chap looking down and laughing. And if he'd pressed his button, he'd have probably cut me in half. Anyway, off he went. It's a good job I didn't hit him, or he'd have come down right among our lot and probably killed a lot more. Anyway, I got to the colonel, and this must have been a few weeks after D-Day, I don't know. Quite a while, anyway, maybe 3 or 4 weeks. I hadn't written home, and my mother had written to the colonel and said, was I all right? And he said, no, you go back and write a letter and come back here and I'll to your mother, which I had to do. I had to go and write to mother. You know, I didn't like... There was nothing to write about. You couldn't say I'm in action because that wasn't allowed. You couldn't say where you were, that wasn't allowed. So what are you going to write about? And just said, I'm well, hope you were all right, and that was it.
I take the point, as a driver, your vision, you know, is limited.
Very limited.
What are your immediate memories now of what happened to you after the first day? Whatever memories you have.
Well, driving country lanes, we hadn't yet got to the Bocage country. That didn't come until after. But the dirtiness of France, the dirty roads, the dirty villages, they weren't like England. They're complete different from England. They were old-fashioned. They were the villages where you've seen them. They were ramshackle old, queer-coloured stone buildings. We never spoke to any French people. I think the first time I ever had anything to do with the French people was up at Vimy Ridge, and we got shelled around about after tea. They were lining up on us, and as soon as it started to come in dusk, we moved, because they knew we were going to get heavily shelled. So they moved our position as it got dusk, and we moved near a pub. We were fortunate enough to be near a pub, the first pub we'd ever seen, and we went in, and the father was playing a concertina, and the mother and the oldest son, about 14, were dancing for us on the thing. And that was the only night, I think, in France that we ever had any sort of social evening. We enjoyed it.
You'd see civilians, though, in Normandy. Did they just ignore you? Did they make no attempts to be friendly?
Can't even remember talking to any or seeing many. They were always out of the way. Looking back, I can't understand where they were. We didn't seem to see any, or if we did, they didn't register at all.
You said that your squadrons had split up after the first day
yes.
or two.
You never saw them.
And you, of course, were still with headquarters.
Mm.
What was headquarters doing? You know, what was happening there?
Well, RHQ went, as I said, the three of the tanks would go in, the colonel would go in with it, but he didn't take any part in any action, because he couldn't, he had no gun. But we went in with probably B squadron, or C squadron, or whatever squadron we were told to go with. We went. You were just like an ordinary Sabre squadron. You just did the same as they did. As a troop, you were like an extra troop to one of the A, B, or C squadron.
Did you get over to the Pegasus Bridge with the squadron that was diverted over there?
No. No, there was only two tanks got up there. They're not a squadron, just one troop was supposed to go up there. Mr. Coker, I think, the Lieutenant Coker. It's a long time, but I think it was Mr. Coker's tank and one other that made Pegasus Bridge.
It was your early fighting days, therefore, in front of Caen. Were you
in front of Caen. In front of Caen, taking the various villages, Breville. Each day you lost tanks. Each day you got new tanks. We didn't, of course, but those that were lost tanks replacements, I don't think there'll be any replacements coming at this time. It'll be too early in the too early to have replacements coming over. So the gaps were filled by other tanks and so forth. Tanks would be getting away, getting repaired. Spare troops would be standing down at RHQ, doing sort of regimental duties, just stand down, waiting for tanks. You'd get replacement crews from FDS. You'd get a tank maybe with a couple of replacements, not young boys from England. But you'd have a certain number of reinforcements to cover the three regiments. So you might get a replacement, 4th Dragoon, coming into the 1318th. And then he was a 1318th.
Do you recall, other than talking about the prisoner of war that you see, did you recall seeing your first German in action against you?
Oh, yes. Yes. Fighting, oh, on D-Day we saw them, yes, the infantry, and I wasn't doing any fighting, I was doing the driving, but the gunners would be weeding them out, they would kill quite a few, they must have done.
When did you meet, or did you meet tank to tank? Did that situation arise with
yes,
you?
Yes,
early
yes, yes, and that was frightening. You tried to get out the way. You weren't as close as, you know, you weren't, you were a long way off. When they hit you, I think it would be a surprise because you weren't really, you were trying to hide. You were no match for them head to head. They had a 88mm, and if you were on your own, you'd had it. If you went in, say about five of you went at one, you'd probably put him out. I think the ratio would be about 5-1, unless you could catch him by surprise, unless you could sneak up on him, which what we had to do. And then we got the Fireflies, that was a 17-pounder, which was a match, more or less, for the...
When did they come to you?
We had them at Mompinken. So I can't remember the exact date, but it must have been very early on.
Were you beginning to form an opinion of the quality of the German soldiers?
They were very good. We had a great respect for them. We put them on par to us. I think we're all fairly equal. I wish we'd had their tanks. I wish we'd had their guns, I should say. We had nothing against the Sherman, it was just the gun. I think our tanks were better than theirs. It was the gun that was weak.
Mechanically,
a Sherman tank was very, very reliable. More so than the German tanks, from what I've read later.
88s, the 88s used in the anti-tank role, had you come across those?
Yes, they were on the Panther tank, which was a very good tank. And if they caught you near at hand, they would go in one side and out the other. They were a very, very powerful gun. You had no chance against an 88.
Did you meet them as anti-tank guns outside of the tank, you know, on the ground? Dug in you, or whatever they did with them.
Sort of an SP, self-repelled.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Self-repelled. I'm not thinking
yes,
of the tank on the gun.
They were the most dangerous, the SP. They were the most dangerous, yeah. An SP gun, they were very, very dangerous.
Can you...
Prepared positions.
Can you manoeuvre in a way to get away from them, or was that possible?
It all depends on the terrain, you know. If you were on a road and there was a boggy field either side, you couldn't get away. If you tried to get in among trees. Bocage was good for that. It helped us. They say that the Bocage country was a difficult country. It certainly helped us. It gave us somewhere to hide. The trouble with Bocage country was that you went down a country lane and the bank sides were so steep and strong, you just couldn't get up over them. You hadn't enough. You couldn't break through to get through. There were so many hedges. They could hide, and they were from there. That was we were the away team. They were the home team, and they knew all the hiding places. That's what they were waiting for. Is they took a lot of weeding out. It took us a long time, and of course, the Americans called us all kinds of names for not being quicker. But I don't think we could have done any more. Oh, they blamed Montgomery for being too careful. From the tapes that I've seen, but he didn't throw lives away needlessly, and I think he was a wonderful chap.
Do you recall any time when? Oh no, you probably didn't see, but when your tank actually knocked a German out, did that ever occur?
I never was in a position to see anything, to see it blowing up or anything like that. I've seen infantry falling when our lads have been shooting, but an actual tank, I never saw it, but we did.
You mentioned.
But then you didn't know whether you'd hit it or somebody else had hit it, you know.
You mentioned that you came ashore with the commandos immediately behind
the
you.
The 4th Commandos.
Who did you join, or who joined you after that? They didn't stay with you, did they?
The infantry. Which infantry came after that?
Which infantry did you work with?
Well, the Staffords. I think it was the South Staffs. And certainly the Norfolks. This was out of the 3rd Div. When we were at Montpincon, it was the 189 Brigade, that was the Somerset Light Infantry, and the Wiltshires. And I think the Wiltshires were down to about 60 men, they said, at the start of Montpincon.
Yeah, we'll come to that, of course. The third division, was, as we've discussed, was made the drive towards Cong,
yes.
Which of course didn't come off at the end of the day.
No.
Did you work with them very long? How long were you with that division?
We were an independent armoured brigade. We weren't in that division. We were sent where we were needed. And in fact, about 6 weeks after D-Day, the 27th Armoured Brigade was so badly mauled that the 8th Armoured Brigade had come ashore on our right, had also been pretty well mauled about, so we amalgamated to form one brigade out of the two, and we were the 8th Armoured Brigade. So we had to take down the pregnant prawn, which we loved and we were so proud of, and put on the fox's mask, which was a circular cotton shoulder plush with a fox's head. That was the 8th Armoured Brigade, and we made that up. 4th-7th Dragoon Guards, 13th-18th, and I think it was the Essex Yeomanry. I think the AOIs had gone back to England. I think.
Had you worked with Canadians prior to this?
The Canadians were very good. We'd been on schemes with the Canadians. They were mostly French Canadians, and they were wonderful chaps. We met them in the early days in Normandy, and they were marvellous chaps. Marvellous. They were just next to us on our right, a few hundred yards to our right, the Canadians, and we worked in very close harmony with them.
Have you any other memories prior to reaching the Bocage area in these early Cong days?
Well, I remember one night talking about the Canadians, and when that terrific thunderstorm came, and they were in a village just about half a mile down from us, the Canadians, and we heard that they had a cinema show that particular evening. So we put our waterproof ground sheets on, which were useless because the water ran straight down onto your legs. They kept your shoulders dry, but the rest of you was worse. And we walked to the Canadian village and went into a barn, and they had a cinema show on, and it was and we were ploughing through dirty, muddy water. It was George Formby on the some motorbike thing about the Isle of Man. It was one of his films about the Isle of Man, TT Races, and he sang a song about the TT Races. And that was the film that was on that particular night. And the Canadians, we were with the Canadians, and they were a wonderful chap. And one gave me a pair of black overalls that night to wear, and I carried it back to the thing. But I didn't use it for being in action, because the Germans also had black overalls, and I only used it for greasing to keep my own ones clean. But they were marvellous chaps, always like the Canadians, that gives you anything.
Any other memories of these early days?
Well, the early days, I remember that we had a parade where we were given French money, and they were baffs. There was 200 French francs, I remember, to the pound. And these were a small pound note, or 10 bob note, 10 shilling note, that was 100 francs. And these were to spend at the Naffy, and the pennies and the halfpennies were a large brown Bakelite piece of, just a brown piece, hexagonal, and that was with one penny on. And this was to get your change. And in fact, I found some just recently, and I put them in the regimental museum. I found five of them, and I put them in the regimental museum. He was in with me kit bag. My kit bag, after the war, we had German prisoners, and one of them was a painter, and he painted my regimental number, my cap badge in blue and gold, and my name, and in the German letters, and I put that my wife washed it and put it in the washing machine, then I took it to the regimental museum, and they have it there now. Its novelty value is because it was done by a German prisoner.
How long were you fighting before you got your first rest?
We got our first rest. Well, if you could call it a rest, it was only a couple of days, and it was a place called Lyon-sur-Mer, on the coast. Lyon or Lyon-sur-Mer. It was a little village on the French coast, and I can't remember much about it, but the only thing I can remember about it was that there was a French couple on the beach making love, and we were watching them out of the pub window. The pub was on the seafront, and we were drinking creme de menthe, which we'd never drunk in our lives before, and we got absolutely blotto on this creme de menthe and staggered back to the tank. And that was all I remember. Another memory I have, which was rather funny, was the tanks were pulled on a lager position one evening round the field, and we had and I walked into the village. There wasn't a soul in the village. There was a dead dog in the main street. There was a dead sheep or something, and I walked into one of the houses, and as soon as I walked in, I had a strange feeling that there was something wrong, and the hairs on the back of my neck went up. And I walked, there was a meal sort of dirty cups and that on the table, dirty plates, half finished meals, and I walked up the stairs, and there was a chap dead, in an old man dead in the bed. And I came down the stairs. Now, it wasn't the smell that had told me, because there was the smell of death in Normandy was everywhere, the smell of death in Normandy. And I went back to the and brought one of the boys. Oh no, I hadn't gone up the stairs. I knew when I got into the house there was something wrong, and I went back and got my mate, and I said, come in here, and what do you think? He said, there's something funny here. And we both went upstairs, and we found this dead young, an old man dead in the bed. So how did we know that there was something wrong? It was just the presence of death was in that house, and we felt it as we went in. Something that you can't explain.
Do you get an instinct, even, you know, driving a tank, that you're going towards something which you have a feeling that there's something wrong with it in that area?
I think everybody does. There was one particular sergeant that was Remy that knew he was going to get killed. And I said, no, you're all right. He wasn't a fighting man, he was a Remy. I don't know whether he was Remy or regiment, one of the regimental people. He was a sergeant. But he was called out late one night to recover a tank, and he said to one of his chaps, this is it. And they went out and they were all killed. The tank that went out to recover it was hit, and they were all killed. So he had a premonition that he was going to be killed. apart, thinking that there might be something there, well, I don't know. You might think there is, or well, it's just, is there something around that corner? You're just being careful. You're prepared for something around that corner, prepared for something. You're living on that all the time. You're living on your nerve ends. Is there an 88 round in that wood? You know, eventually you meet one, but you're always looking for that.
Did a religious belief or strength help you at all?
Well,
in your case?
This was something that struck me as rather. This struck me as a little bit. I can't put a word to this, but you would get down in a field on your knees, and the padre would come with his ammunition box, and he'd put a white tablecloth over the top, and then he'd put his I don't know what they call it, it's a blue thing with a cross on, and then he'd put his candlesticks on, and out come the book, and he'd say how marvellous we were, and we were God's creatures, and that we were going to get the enemy, and we were going to massacre them and free the world and all this. And 2 miles down the road, they were doing the same. They had God with us on all the belts. I think they were more religious than we were. And they were on the fight of the Lord and all this. And then you went and knocked hell out of each other. And after the war, for a long time, I didn't want to know anything about church. I thought it finished me with religion. I thought it's not right.
Have you been in a situation of extreme danger, personal danger, feeling that, you know, oh, I'm not going to get out of this? And if religion isn't, you know, God isn't giving you the strength that is to get through, what are your thoughts? Are they with your mother or what have you? Or is it
mother,
purely the door, job?
I think if the times when you're getting bombed and you're getting shelled and for any length of time, and I don't care who they are, if you're getting shelled for a long, long time, it has a terrible effect on your nerves and your mind. I've seen Germans come out what we call bomb happy, and they've just been absolutely vacant. They've had too much of it. I think when you're getting shelled like that, it's your mother and your family to think about. It was with me anyway. It certainly wasn't religion. I wasn't praying that God would put, because at that particular time I didn't believe in it very much. I thought it was just a farce, that if there was a God, he wouldn't allow young people to kill each other like what we were doing. I think it was your mother. In fact, I've heard boys that were severely wounded. That was the last thing they said, was mother. On more than one occasion, boys that have died.
Did you have a personal feeling that you were going to survive?
Yes.
It was strong within you all the time?
Yes. And this corporal that was with us, he said that his wife had a fortune told and that he was going to be all right, and he would get slightly wounded. He would get wounded, but he would survive. And when he told us all that, we thought, well, we're all right, and we were. And I think he got a little tiny little bit of shrapnel one night in France, which didn't even stop him, and it was, I think it was in his back or his leg or somewhere, and it was just a tiny little piece. And he said, that's it, that's me wound now, I'm all right, which we were. But I never thought that it was always going to be the other fella. I never had any premonitions that thing. I remember standing talking to a chap in a field one day when an 88 or whatever it was, there was a lorry, an empty lorry standing behind us, and it went between the two of us at waist, chest high. It went between the two of us and went right through one side of the lorry and out the other, and left a fair-sized hole. And I said to this chap, well, it don't come much closer than that.